This is Iconic.
Welcome to Iconic, where we talk about all things 13th Age. I'm your host, JM, and with me as always are Nick, Becca, and Mark.
Hey.
Hello.
Howdy.
We have a great show for you this week. We are doing our review of Book of the Underworld, which is the new 13th Age source book for all things underneath the Dragon Empire by Gareth Ryder Hanrahan. So this is going to be kind of our typical review show where we cover the book in a very high level overview so that you are intrigued enough to buy the book but don't have enough information to just go and ignore purchasing the book and run away with it yourselves. So Mark, you said kind of in our notes that this is reminds you of another product from F20 history. Which book is that?
Many years ago in first edition, as we refer to it now, they came out with the Dungeoneer Survival Guide, because for years we just played with running through the forest and cities and everybody could picture that. But as soon as you went underground, what's there? I mean, we're kind of familiar with some caves and some spelunking, but that really delved into underground cities and realms and what was there and how they developed. It was very helpful because most of us don't live underground, so we're not familiar with that. So this is very much like that, and it helps you put out what is that, you know, drow civilization underground, and how do they get there?
Mm-hmm.
How do they interact? How do trades work? So this is a really good product for that.
And Becca, so you had shared, so what is the structure of, I mean, we kind of have our introduction, but then the Gar has kind of broken up the underworld. What are those sections?
There are three sections to the underworld. There is the Underland, the Hollow Realm, and the Deeps. And as the book goes through these sections, they are going deeper into what lies below the surface of the Dragon Empire, or wherever you place your game. So the Underland is closer to the surface, whereas the Deeps are clearly deeper.
Mm-hmm.
And the weirder, or the deeper you go, the weirder it gets.
Yeah. And they're roughly analogous to, like, the Underland is sort of the adventurer tier location, and the Hollow Realms, you kind of transition into champion tier, and then when you hit the Deeps, that is really sort of like where the epic nature of the game sort of takes place. However, Gar kind of starts us off with just a guide to what the underworld is and what underworld adventuring kind of is like. Some good advice on how to run a game in the underworld. He also adds hazardous montages, which is something I really liked. So as you're traveling through Underland, again, 13th Age is in a game where we do a lot of resource management. So we're not tracking light, we're not tracking rations, we're not tracking how many picks did you bring and how often do they break. But traveling through the underworld is a dangerous area, and even more so, say, than traveling across the Dragon Empire. So he adds some rules to how to set the scenes for your underworld adventures, really, again, kind of leaning into that 13th Age mindset of pushing a lot of these questions back on the players, but also how can we make these montages that we do a little bit more dangerous. I really liked the way he implemented that.
Yeah, the main difference that I picked up between the hazards and just a normal montage is a montage normally doesn't cost you anything.
Mm-hmm.
It's all story, you know, and it's not going to use up a spell or use up a recovery or something along those lines. But a hazard has a little bit more of an impact on the character's sheet, if you will. And so it is costing the character a little bit more than just the story element, which seemed appropriate to me as the party is starting to delve deeper and deeper into the underworld. One of the things in this section that I did really like too is about how to set the scene for underground adventuring, that way you're not just always saying, hey guys, look, it's another cave and there's monsters here and here's another cave and there's monsters here. It really pushes it back on the players and asks them, what's the layout of this room going to be? You know, what sort of the terrain is going to be here? And a number of other questions and categories like that, that the book gives you as the GM a lot of very helpful, very specific ways of getting the players to create the scene that they are going to then have the encounter in.
And in that same vein, this book is filled with lists and roll tables. And so if you are having trouble coming up with a new idea, you can find one on a list, whether you roll for it or choose it. But there's 50 underground hazards just right off the bat. So if you are having trouble yourself as the GM envisioning your underground campaign, this is where you can start.
So each of the three sections starts with a quick guide, a quick overview of the realms. So let's just start with Underland. So Underland is the closest to the surface, as Becca said. You're going to find a lot of things in the 13th Age rulebook that sort of straddle the line between the Dragon Empire and the Underworld here. They're going to talk about Forge, and they're going to talk about Gorgon's Maw, and like the Orc Warrens. These are things, and Moonwreck. These are things that we've seen on the map. We have touched on them in Core Rulebook and 13 True Ways, but they're going to take a little bit deeper look at some of these things. What stood out to you in the Underland chapter as things that you really liked or sparked the imagination or said, I have to take my campaign here?
I really like the Barrowdeep Warrens. It's a kind of it's a gnomish wizarding school. And they're doing the school kind of outside the purview of the Archmage. And, you know, as they're working with the different illusions and stuff, there's always these chances and opportunities to go a little bit deeper under the earth and figure out, you know, what's going on. Maybe they're at one of the doorways into the Underland or one of the pathways, and sometimes they just need these magical artifacts or ingredients for some of their spells, and they can't really get it through legal means because it's not really a officially recognized school. But I really like that. And then I loved the fact that there was a lot more detail that went into describing and defining the dwarven city of Forge. And because that's going to be a very commonly expected location to be able to get into whatever the Underland is.
What about you, Mark?
So the Abbess of Ghost Dragon Monastery. Ghost Dragon Monastery is a secret underground monastery here claimed to have contact with ghosts of the White. I like that.
Yeah, it definitely ties in with sort of our themes and icons for the show. What about you, Becca?
I found the root web very interesting, and I kind of hope none of my players listen to this because I will be using it in my 13th Age campaign here. And it's the idea that the magical roots connect all the natural magical wellsprings of the empire. And I think it helps to bring the High Druid icon in particular into the underworld. Because a lot of times when you're looking at the underworld, you might only think the Lich King or something that has to do with being underground, deep and dark and creepy. This book does a really good job of introducing how the icons fit into the underworld. And it also brings out some new icons that you could use. But I really like how the root web gives a solid purchase for the High Druid.
Including some terrain caster advice if one of your players is going to be using that. Jane, what stood out to you in this this first section on the Underland?
It's not so much that it stood out to me, but I was the developer on the book. This was the first development work that I did for 13th Age, and I was able to create some monsters. And so I really enjoyed kind of exploring the Red Dust Exiles and the Lost River and coming up with some new mechanics for monsters that kind of tied in with the themes that Gar had laid down. So in the Lost River, it's sort of representative of all of the underworld rivers that kind of exist in F20 Legend. And so we made this elemental that when they hit you, they have a chance of stripping away some of your backgrounds, and you have to roll a new background that lasts until your next full heal up. So they may replace one of your backgrounds with, you know, Dwarven Rivet Collector or Karubait or Keeper of Spoons. As they've sort of chewed on the good memories and kind of taken away yours and replaced them with something, you know, awful or dull. Not completely unuseful, because, you know, 13th Age players are known for using their backgrounds in very unique sort of ways. And then the Red Dust Exiles, it was neat to build. They basically work like a double strength battle where you fight the exiles until you realize they are just using you as bait for something larger. And at some point during the fight, if you don't kill them quickly, their trap is set and something larger comes to engage the group. And then if you survive, the Red Dust Exiles come to finish you off. So I really enjoyed kind of breaking up kind of the normal flow of combat with something like that.
One of the things that I really liked just in general on this chapter is the wide variety of options and locations that are depicted here. There was 18 different locations that are laid out, some of them more in depth than others, but all of them are laid out in a way that you could conceivably take it and run with it and potentially ramp an entire campaign around just going and residing and delving into just this underland. You wouldn't have to go any deeper than that. There's such a wealth even in just this one chapter.
Mm-hmm. And in that, they give you 6 different ways that the drow exist. So like 6 different ways that you can incorporate drow into the world, whether or not they are just misunderstood drug addicts or, you know, the elf queens, shadowy assassins. So even something like that can take something that we all think we know well and going, well, here are some other options. And I think what this does really well is it takes a book that you can use over and over again, but each time your campaign is going to be a little bit different.
Yeah, I think Gar did a spectacular job with that. Just the fact that it's designed much like the Book of Ages, where each time you use it, it provides sort of new inspiration and kind of something new to your campaign. And Gar kind of gives you some outlines on, hey, do you want to just go in there once and come back out? That's totally fine. Do you want to run an entire campaign here? That's also great.
And people who run this or read through it will find the Underland very familiar. That's kind of traditionally how far players delve, you know, Orcwarns or Underforge or somewhere like that. That they're somewhat familiar. It's not that weird. It's just a cave underground. Now that we go deeper, it's going to get kind of weird.
Yeah, things are going to continue to grow a little bit stranger. So let's talk about the Hollow Realms. Becca, can you kind of give us a brief overview of what the Hollow Realms are?
Yeah, this is the middle portion. It's deeper than the Underland, somewhere that your players may be familiar with, but not quite the Journey to the Center of the Earth weirdness of the Deeps. But close. There's a few different empires. There's some new magical substances. There are a couple of unique terrain features, like a giant underground lake. I really enjoyed the Hollow Realm section of this book. It gave me a lot of great ideas to put into other games that I have of going, ooh, this is something that is interesting, intriguing, mysterious, and could potentially kill all the players. So I was a huge fan of the Hollow Realm, particularly the magical substances, the 13 forgotten gods, and the 4 kingdoms of the mechanical sun. So yeah, the 4 kingdoms of the mechanical sun is the idea that there is a ancient dwarf created mechanical sun that gives off the light and relative warmth of the sun that you would feel on the surface. It is carried by some mechanical golems that are even more impressive and immovable than the Koru Mammoths up above. And they follow a series of waystones in this hollow realm. The four kingdoms are then kingdoms with dwarves, with humans, serpent people that are trying to manipulate the waystones so that the mechanical sun will come and stay in their realm, thereby providing warmth, light, and life. So there's like this ongoing campaign and war happening that your players don't have to be involved in. But if you like a more political led campaign, this would be a place to do it. You have four different factions that are essentially fighting for life.
It's perfect for an adventuring group to get into and be the outsider influence that they would try to pull in to get, you know, above the other kingdom.
Mm-hmm.
A lot of nice adventures there. That was my pick too. That was something I would use.
What about you?
I really liked the four kingdoms as well. It seemed indicative to me that this entire section of the entire Hollow Realm section almost seemed more of a self-contained underworld world where you have these different civilizations, you have these different societies, you have these different races and cultures, and they could live their entire existence with having very minimal contact with the surface world. There's enough hooks in here where you could have that more contact, but these could be self-contained worlds or self-contained systems. So, you know, the example of the four kingdoms, you could even start a campaign there. You could have them be, you know, a resident of one of these four civilizations at war with the others, and maybe from there expand somewhere else. You wouldn't have to start on the surface and delve your way deep down to this point.
You'd start them in the kingdoms and send them to that weird place above ground?
Exactly. Maybe
the sun that rises and sets and isn't like carried around on giant mechanical golems.
Right. Well, maybe something has happened to that mechanical sun and it needs to be repaired, and they find some ancient tome that says this weird race called dwarves built this, and they have a city called Forge, and to get there you go up. And you know, maybe not any more information than that, and you rise up, and then you meet all of these weird short people, and then you step foot and see the real sun. Like, well, where's the golems? Where's the statues? Who's carrying this thing? You know, actually, that'd be a lot of fun.
Very cool. So, Nick, was there something else like specifically that stood out for you?
I liked the concept of the demon cysts, where it's these let's say crystals that contain the demons that as they're erupting or as they're rising out of the hell holes and such, they end up getting trapped and just kind of this cyst of the earth, and they're stuck there. And on that vein, I really liked the section on the Tomb of the 10,000, where the Archmage who dabbled a little bit too much and ended up in a last minute gasp saved the world by putting himself in one of these cysts with 10,000 demons. And that has since sunk down into this hollow realm, and lot of opportunities for the PCs to make things better or maybe make things a little bit worse if they go poking too hard at that.
Yeah, that was my favorite part. And the Archmage of that age was a she, Nick. Just saying.
Fair enough. Missed that point.
It was fun to kind of look at this idea of that Gar put in here of, hey, there's 10,001, you know, 10,000 demons kind of stuck here. And why would anyone go there? Just leave it alone. And so there's 13 different reasons on why would the icons send people here? Why would adventurers come here? Because it really seems like a really good place to leave, be, and never go there. Last but not least, we kind of descend into the deeps. And the deeps are sort of purposefully the weirdest. Crazy. Yeah, the craziest, the weirdest, the least defined out of all of the realms, because as you sort of head down through these areas. Really, at this point, the deeps are where you as the GM can put like your wildest and your craziest ideas. Now, Gar really enjoyed the Underkrakens, and so kind of from 13 True Ways, and he brought them back in into this, where the deeps are where they kind of have landed or invaded this world, and they're sort of rising up from there.
Well, this was an interesting chapter in that it talked through a number of different things, not so much as key locations, but more of key ideas mm-hmm. that you could have be a focus for your campaign. The one that I really liked was the Master of the Dungeons. And it's basically this entity that's making the dungeons and making the monsters and sending them forth to test the mettle of adventurers. And maybe in one day, the right adventurer or the right hero will actually make its way, survive everything and make its way all the way down to the master. And then who knows what will happen? Maybe they'll take over, or maybe they'll get something, or, you know, take on the reins of the new age or something. But I like that idea of there being something out there that's actually creating these, the fodder for all of the encounters that the PCs are going to be going to.
There was something in the Hollow Realm called the Throne Under the Mountain. And it was definitely emphasized that the wrong PC or NPC who sits on this throne is not going to survive it. And taking that idea and with either the master of the dungeons or the catacombs of the gods and starting to pair those things together, you can come up with this long campaign arc to get your PCs to the point where they are either looking at the master, looking at all the catacombs, or looking at this throne, and their next action is going to define the next age.
That one's a fun one. Like, I like that idea a lot.
I like the weirding. That whole idea of the wards that protect the world, both above and below, kind of meet, and I kind of picture it like your trash bag, where you pull it together, and there's a tiny little hole at the end that just a little bit of chaos leaks through. And where mages, you know, magic shouldn't make sense, but mages learn, oh, if I do this and wave my hands, I can pull a little bit of that chaos power out into spells. And I like the description where chaos mages just kind of kick a hole in that ward and see what pops through.
Yeah.
Perfect for chaos mages. So the weirding I like a lot. And that would give you a reason if you have a mage or maybe the archmage or someone wants you to go down there and open it up or do something in that area of pure chaos magic to create something would give you a reason to go that deep.
There's a part of me that finds that just absolutely terrifying when I think of my chaos mage in my campaign.
Legit.
I don't want her to go and kick open this because I will then have to explain why and how the world ended.
It would end the age.
It would. Indeed.
It definitely would. I sort of feel like you should not let, you should not do that with Y.
I know Y will have no idea that this is a possibility ever.
Okay, good. I feel no. Much safer with my world in your hands now.
Right. Yeah, you and me both, man.
All right, so there are monsters, there are magic items, there are a ton of other things in this book. Is there anything else that really stood out that you really want to say, hey, like, let's talk about this?
There's lots of cool monsters. The Soul Flenser caught my eye right away. I'm sure that's some Nephorus GM came up with that.
On the topic of the Flensers, I like how they interacted with the Underkrakens. And that was, you know, that's kind of their home base or their home vessel, if you will. And they're out there and then they teleport back home to escape from the combat. That's where they end up going back to, is that Underkraken. Mm-hmm. But if you're fighting them there, there's nowhere else for them to teleport. I like that connection between those two monsters.
Becca, what else? Anything else stand out for you?
I think I've said it a few times already, but just with this whole book, I find it a great GM source book with all these lists, all these roles, all these options for you that if you find that maybe the Soul Flenser isn't working, well, it's time to pull out the, you know, Flens Master. Really lay it down on those PCs.
I do have something that really has nothing to do with adventures or campaign settings, and it's a shout out to the guys who put these together in 13th Age. The Dero quotes at the section are worth the price of the book just to read those. They are fantastic.
They really help sell the fact that there's something crazy going on down there, and everybody's going a little crazy.
Yeah.
Very crazy. Weird.
Gar did a fantastic job with those.
One of the things that I love about 13th Age books is they're just a lot of fun to read. And those Darrow quotes are certainly one of those highlights as I was flipping through. It's like, oh, look, here's going to be another quote on this page. You know, forget everything else I'm reading. I want to read this first. I like that. Also, in general, I loved the tie-ins from this book into all of the other source books. You know, they're pulling monsters, they're pulling icons, they're pulling locations, they're pulling things from so many of the other different source books and really referencing across the board like that. And I loved how inclusive that was. This isn't just a standalone book, though it can be used standalone, but it really felt like it was a part of the rest of the 13th Age product line.
Mm-hmm. Well, and I think also just to point out, you don't necessarily need any of the other 13th Age product line to use this.
Right.
You can just pick up this book. It like all of the monsters in the book are referenced there. So you don't need 13 True Ways. You have the Soul Flensers and all of that material right there for you.
Yeah, but at the same time, if you want to know more about the Gold King icon that's referenced in this book as one of the hooks to get your characters maybe underworld, you could go reference that in the bestiary and read more up on that too.
I would say it's definitely worth it. Even if you're like, well, I don't really plan on a campaign in the whole underworld, it's worth it just to spice up your normal campaign when you delve underground. To have more than just, yeah, you're in the cave, there's some monsters, it gives you more. And before you know it, you never know, you might have an underground campaign. So even if it doesn't really like, well, that might not appeal to me, it's worth what's there. And the adventure ideas, the campaign ideas, they're fantastic.
I feel like I've always been in support of the source books that we've reviewed. And I'm in definite support of this one as well, because I think Pelgrane in particular does a really nice job of giving you so many options that you can stitch together a campaign that is so unique to you, but you've been able to find all the information and all the source for it without having to do a lot of your own monster creation or what would be weird in this world. Oh, I can go here's something. This will intrigue my players.
Yeah, they do a really great job of providing material that ignites and captures the imagination. All right. Well, I think that sort of wraps up our discussion of the Book of the Underworld. Unfortunately, when this episode goes live, we have been running the coupon for the last four episodes, and the coupon ends for the Book of the Underworld, I think, when this episode goes live. So if you have yet to pick it up and you're listening to this, run out and try and see if the coupon still works. If it doesn't, your time has been missed. But again, this was a lot of fun to just sort of chat over with you guys. I'm glad that you liked it. I kind of had this exceptional opportunity to do development work on it. So it is very exciting for me to kind of hear people's responses on it.
Yeah, definitely one of my favorite source books. You know, I would put this right next to the Book of the Ages, just as far as setting and source material and adventure hooks and all of that. Yeah, this is right up there in my opinion.
Very cool. Well, thank you all for listening, and we'll be back in 2 weeks with a new episode. And if you'd like to support the show, you can do so by becoming a patron at patreon.com/iconicpodcast.
Well, you've been listening to the Iconic Podcast.
If you have any questions, comments, or feedback, you can contact us at iconicpodcast@gmail.com or call and leave a voicemail at 720-924-1706.
And be sure to check out iconicpodcast.com for news, updates, and new episodes.
Thanks for listening.